You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Jam-packed show today. We're going to talk Razorback football and everything that goes along with it. Lots to get to on this show. We'll also give you our weekend predictions. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
As is often the case, the story of Razorback football today is everything away from the game. Arkansas is playing LSU tomorrow, and I promise you we're going to talk about that game on the show today. It's going to be 11:45 a.m. kickoff on SEC Network tomorrow. The Razorbacks and the Tigers, we think this is the first time in SEC history that there have been two SEC teams who have met with interim head coaches. You got Bobby Petrino for the Razorbacks, Frank Wilson for LSU. Lots of storylines that surround that game, but it seems like everybody's focus is on the future or on things off the field. And a couple of items to get to today. Number one, and we'll touch on this a little bit later, Hunter Yurecek becoming the chairman of the college football playoff selection committee. We've got some thoughts on that. Christina's got some good insights on that as well. And then, you know, we'll start off, though, with this story that Pete Nakos had yesterday from On3, where he – and this is really the first time that I would say one of these really plugged-in national types has weighed in on the Arkansas job and what they're hearing about who the candidates are for the Razorbacks. And, you know, he mentioned four candidates pretty prominently in terms of the Arkansas search. I should say four of them, not counting Rhett Lashley, who I think we all know Arkansas had interest in, and then SMU ended up giving him a new contract. But according to, again, this is Pete Nakos at On3, he says Arkansas, like a lot of teams, are talking to James Franklin here during this coaching search. And then he mentioned the three from the American Athletic Conference, John Summerall at Tulane, Alex Golish at South Florida, and Ryan Silverfield at Memphis. He also said there's interest there in North Texas's Eric Morris. There's interest, I thought this one was kind of interesting, in Northwestern head coach or former Northwestern coach Pat Fitzgerald, who I guess everything has settled now. And was he wrongfully fired? How did that work out at Northwestern?
He was exonerated, I guess.
Either way, he's not going to excite people at Arkansas.
Well, I've seen people on our board that are interested in him. I'm not inspired by that choice.
Like overall, if he were to get hired, it would fall very flat. And then PJ Fleck, who we talked about on this show a couple of weeks ago at Minnesota, who I tried to convey then that if I were the AD, I would look at someone like Fleck, not necessarily Fleck, but, you know, someone who is at a program in a power conference that doesn't have the resources of the top tier and who makes a competitive team. So when you hear these names, oh, and by the way, Pete Nakos also reported this morning that there has been contact made between Arkansas and Ed Ogeron, the former LSU coach. Now, you know, contact, and I don't know what's going on there. Contact could be something as simple as your agent reaches out to them and says, hey, we're interested. That is contact. So I don't know how realistic that is. But, of course, you know, you got Ed Ogeron out there wanting to get back into the coaching community. He's only 6 years removed from winning a national championship. Now, it didn't end well for him at LSU, obviously. So there's that. There was reporting today on the Chuck and Bo show that James Franklin is not a candidate at Arkansas.
Did they not go so far as to say that he never was?
I don't know if they said it that way, but basically the main takeaway from them was that he's not a candidate.
Because I was like, he definitely so that would, was.
That would run counter to what Pete Nakos reported last night. When he said that Arkansas, and this is his words, Arkansas has pursued former Penn State coach James Franklin, who was also a top name in the Virginia Tech search. You and I have talked about James Franklin a lot. Virginia Tech feels like a very logical landing spot for him. I don't know that he wants to get into an SEC program that's going to have the type of, I don't even want to say unrealistic expectations that Penn State had, but I don't know that he wants to get into that hey, you know, if you're not competing for a national championship by year whatever, you have failed us. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it would be that case at Virginia Tech. And I also think at Virginia Tech in the ACC, you got a lot, you know, I mean, it's a lot easier path to the championship or at least to the playoff than you'd have at any of these SEC jobs that are open.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, his name has been attached to Virginia Tech for so long now in this search since they were also so early to get involved in this coaching cycle. And I actually have a really close friend who covers Virginia Tech. And so we've been talking about, mm-hmm. you know, the back and forth there. And they're kind of, you know, it's been funny to hear what's going on with their search and what they're hearing and what fans are talking about and what people are talking about, because it's very similar to Arkansas because of, like I said, how early both of these programs got in on the market. And so there's been this long runway to like freak out about things and to, you know, you go through the phases of like, well, maybe it'll be this guy or maybe this is happening and maybe, and you know, the messaging kind of changes throughout. So it's been interesting to kind of compare notes on our mm-hmm. Respective coaching searches. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think Franklin at Virginia Tech would make a lot of sense. I think it would make more sense than it would at Arkansas. I think he was a candidate, but I think
may still be.
My guess, you know, about what this kind of would mean if indeed he is no longer a candidate would just mean that they, you know, the negotiation that was happening, Arkansas just kind of pulled out of it. They just couldn't really find something that
or maybe he said.
Or maybe he said, yeah.
There's other jobs that are more for me. Bart Pullman, who's a producer at Chuck and Bo, he tweeted this morning, quote, James Franklin is not a factor in the Arkansas coaching search. Now, whether or not that's his original reporting, I don't know. I haven't reached out to Bart. But that was the gist of what was being discussed on that show this morning. You know, I think that for the last couple of months, there has been this thought that Juracek is going to be able to maybe do for football what he did for basketball a year and a half ago, where he goes out and he gets, I mean, pulls a real rabbit out of the hat, gets John Calipari, and people go, whoa, he's going there? I don't know that that's going to happen with football this year. Maybe it ends up happening. Maybe, you know, I mean, maybe somebody is disgruntled somewhere, and at the end, this all works out, and you get that big splash hire. But I think where I've been, you know, pretty consistently with this over the last couple of months is that this is going to be somebody who you hire, and it's probably going to be a step up in class for them, right? I mean, and I think that's kind of what historically Arkansas has been. It has been a stepping stone job, at least in terms of someone took a step up in their career to come to Arkansas. It very rarely has it been where this is the stepping stone to something bigger. Mm-hmm. In fact, I don't know that I can think of any instance where, you know, there have been a couple of what I would say were lateral at best moves. Mm-hmm. Houston Nutt kind of got out before the posse and went to Ole Miss. Ken Hatfield kind of did the same thing and went to Clemson. But you look at the coaches who have come through here, even beginning with Frank Broyles. Nobody knew who Frank Broyles was. He'd been head coach for 1 year at Missouri. I would say that, you know, beginning with Broyles in the late 50s, all of the head coaching hires that Arkansas has made over, what would that be, about 70 years?
Yeah.
There's really three that you would say they were not stepping stone jobs. Two of them were Bobby Petrino and Lou Holtz, and those were kind of, they hit the ejection button from the NFL and landed in Fayetteville. And really the only one where you would say Arkansas took somebody out of what was potentially a better job was whenever Brett Bielema got hired here in 2012. He'd gone to, I think, three straight Rose Bowls, had just, you know, whipped Nebraska in the Big Ten championship game a couple of days earlier. That didn't work out here, and, you know, it was just not a good fit for him here ultimately. But, you know, for the most part, I mean, whether it be Ken Hatfield coming from the Air Force Academy or, you know, Chad Morris coming from SMU, Sam Pittman never being a head coach before, Houston Nutt from Boise State, I mean, like, there have been a lot of instances where it has been a step up to Arkansas, and then whether or not they're successful here is, you know, I mean, that's going to determine whether or not they take a step somewhere else or they stay around.
Yeah, and I think that was something that I was talking about, I think, when I came on last week, where I think there's people that feel like if you don't get a big name, whatever, I feel like everybody kind of has a different idea of what
I feel like
is.
Everybody is a big name at this point because they get discussed so much.
Yes.
I mean, like when you've got a 2 month coaching search, the amount of nitpicking and just over analyzing of candidates is, I don't even know if I can put it into words.
Yeah. But I think there's this idea that if they can't get a big name, then they've failed. And I don't think that that's true. I just don't think that's the only way to be successful. I think, like I've said this before, that you can get somebody from a lower level. I think ideally, going back to what you and I have talked about, going all the way back to when we, you know, the first week of this whole thing, we were talking about how you want somebody that's won somewhere. You want somebody that knows how to win. But that can be at a lower level. And I don't think that has to be a bad thing. I don't think that's a failure. I don't think it means you had to scrape the bottom of the barrel. I don't think getting a Silverfield, a Golish, a Sumrall, like, which Sumrall, I think, is a pretty hot name for some of the other SEC openings.
Especially Auburn.
I'd be surprised if he kind of fell to Arkansas. But I think, you know, when you look at some of these guys who I don't think people are referring to Alex Golish and Ryan Silverfield when they're talking about big names. But I don't think those would be bad hires. Now, I'm not saying I know that they would work or that they wouldn't work, but that's the thing. I don't think it is a bad choice to go that route because, and I know people don't like him and I don't really like him personality wise either. But when you look at, you know, Eli Drinkwitz is the example that comes to my mind first when I think about this. They get him from App State. He'd been successful there. He'd been a younger guy kind of rising. And it's worked out really well for them. It's elevated the profile of their program. They've been able to kind of get the administration and get some money behind them, and they've been able to kind of lay a good foundation to where if he leaves for one of these open jobs, because I know his name is being attached to a few different searches, they're going to be in position, better position than they would have been before to get another solid coach. The problem is, it's a gamble, like it is with any hire. It is a gamble of whether or not it's going to work out. It is a gamble of whether or not they're going to be able to win. You have to set them up for success financially, all of that, but it is still up to them and up to their players to actually execute. And you can't guarantee that they're going to do that. So it is a gamble, but I don't think it's a bad one to take.
How do you think Indiana fans felt 2 years ago? Kurt who?
Yeah,
who's
I know.
Kurt? How do you say that last name?
I said the same thing about Mike Elko. I said this on the radio the other day.
And I look at the top 10 right here, right now. Ryan Day was a first-time head coach at Ohio State. Now, that's a little bit different because he'd been their coordinator. But you got Cignetti. You've got Elko. That's the top three. Elko had been a head coach for 2 years
at Duke. I can't imagine how many Texas A&M fans were going, the guy from Duke when they hired him? You know, like people knew he had been successful. People were kind of rooting for Duke because they had an interesting story. But I think a lot of people at A&M probably went, well, that's not our culture. That doesn't fit. That's not a big enough name for our program or whatever. And look at what he's doing.
Oregon's number 7, Dan Lanning, came out of nowhere. Texas Tech, number 8, Joey McGuire. He'd been a high school coach for most of his time. And you can go on down the list. I mean, everybody knows the Clark Lee story right now, Brent Pry at Georgia Tech. I think what happens when you get a name is that you get kind of that immediate boost in fundraising. And when you don't...
Which is a good thing to have, especially for a program like Arkansas that keeps saying they need money.
But if you really feel like this guy can win, whoever this guy is, hire him. Let him do his job, and then if he does what you really think he's going to do, people are going to like the results. You don't have to win the press conference. That's what I – and by the way, the press conference, let me get to that here in just a second. But on winning the press conference, Chad Morris won the press conference. He didn't win again. Like, that was his only win at Arkansas, other than, you know, Portland State and Club Dub.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like the guy never won. He won 4 games at Arkansas, but he won the press conference. Who cares if you win the press conference? It's about winning – the game.
Yeah.
You know, who wants to do that? Who wants to win?
Right.
You know, we just want to win the headlines and the social media.
Exactly. And I remember, you know, when we keep going back to the John Calipari analogy, and I remember when they hired him, it was all Kentucky fans saying, well, just wait till he starts losing. And then they did start losing, and then they started winning, and they ended up turning it into a successful first year. And so, you know, there's obviously a lot more left. It could go a lot of different ways going forward. But I think even if you do get a big name, you know, it might work, it might not.
I mentioned the press conference. Just timing on this, I don't think that this is anything imminent. Based on, and again, whoever they hire and, you know, whenever that starts to come together is going to determine all of this. But the feeling I get, Christina, is that December 3rd is the date to watch. December 3rd is the day that the early national signing period begins for high school players. It's earlier this year than it's been. You know, it's usually been that week before Christmas, or at least since they, you know, since they established the early signing period. It's going to start December 3rd this year. I expect there to be an announcement between the Missouri game, which is on the 29th of November, and before signing period begins on December 3rd. That's kind of the window.
So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday?
Sunday, Monday would probably be the days that I would say to watch.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to work out that way, but I know that there are people over there in that building that's kind of the timeline that, at least in the back of their mind, they're thinking, hey, this is how this is probably going to go down. And you think about, you know, before the Missouri game, that's Thanksgiving week. Well, nobody's going to make an announcement on Thanksgiving, yeah. I don't think.
I hope not.
Boy, that would be fun, wouldn't it? I remember the 4th of July in 2012. I'm sitting around at a barbecue, and the AP breaks. John L. Smith is filing for bankruptcy. I'm like, holy crap, guys. You can't write this on the 3rd or on the 5th. You got to hold this for, you know.
So funny.
The 4th of July. Jonathan Williams, a football player, one time, he decided to announce that he was going to come back to Arkansas on Christmas Eve at about 7 o'clock at night. Yeah, that didn't go too well with the holiday plans.
Wasn't it Courtney Crutchfield that announced he was transferring to Arkansas on Christmas Day or something? We had to deal with that this past year. It was so annoying.
There needs to be some situational awareness here. Yes. Please don't hire a coach.
He said, I am the gift.
If you're Pete Nakos or Pete Thamel or anything, if it's on Thanksgiving, don't announce this on Thanksgiving.
You guys have families too.
Hold it for 3 o'clock the next morning or something. So that's kind of
schedule the tweet.
Timing wise, that's what I'm thinking. I don't think that this is, I know there's a lot of people who it surprises me a little bit. It feels like there's a lot of people right now, though, who are just refreshing all the time. Is there anything new? Is there anything? I don't think there's going to be anything new for a while.
There's going to be rumor. There's going to be lots of things to think about, places to put your brain. And that last week is going to be crazy. But let me ask you this. So I've been talking to people about that too. And I've been kind of mentioning that kind of seems like how it's looking. And the response I get from most people is, well, doesn't that mean, wouldn't they have to already have somebody kind of in place? Like, how would they know that they were going to have somebody ready? I know, they were like, how do they know they're going to have somebody ready that weekend? I'm like, I think a lot of people are going to be making the hire.
It can happen very fast.
Exactly.
Is what I'll say. It can happen really, really, really fast. Like, you get the offer, and maybe there's a press release that night.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen before.
Yeah.
Speaking of timing. Mm-hmm. Hunter Yurecek got promoted yesterday to chairman of the college football playoff selection committee. Mack Rhodes, who is the AD at Baylor, he stepped down from the selection committee. He has taken a personal leave of absence at Baylor in his job as an AD. Nobody seems to know quite what's going on there, but it seems like maybe there have been some allegations that have been made against him that have forced this chain of events. So Hunter Yurecek is going to be the chairman of the selection committee, and this is going to begin immediately. He is going to be the guy beginning Tuesday night of next week when they announce the playoff rankings and Reese Davis comes and says, hey, you know, why do you have this team at 13 and this team at 12? And, he's going to be the one that's going to be tasked with explaining that. That's interesting to me. But it also, you think about timing of this, and for full disclosure, Christina's dad is Jeff Long, who, former AD at Arkansas, used to be the chairman of the playoff committee. So you've got a little bit of an awareness of how this works. The chairman, I don't know that it's a hugely expanded role from being on the playoff committee, but there are added responsibilities when you're the chair. Basically, you are tasked with leading the meeting.
Yeah.
And, like I said, then you also have that responsibility on Tuesday night to sit there and account for the committee's actions. And so it's going to be a little bit of an expanded role for him. How does it affect the coaching search? I don't know. I can't imagine he would have taken this job without checking to make sure that, hey, this is okay with everybody that's involved, and assuring that, hey, we've got everything, all of our bases covered as it pertains to not only the day-to-day AD responsibilities, but also the head coaching search that he's having to go through. But just based on your knowledge of this, what does the chairman of the playoff committee, what does that mean? And what are the added responsibilities over, say, being somebody who just has to be down there on Monday and Tuesday, cast their vote, and then get out of town?
Yeah, so it is basically, they are the leader in the room, kind of leading the discussion. They are directing how the discussion is going. And so it requires a little bit more prep time. You know, all of these people are watching the games. They are taking their notes. They are doing some prep. I think the way that they've done it this year is they've divided different people have different schools or conferences that they are assigned to watch the most. You know, you kind of you're kind of the person that's supposed to monitor, you know, the ACC. And there might be more. I think there's more than one. And Hunter told me what league he has, but I don't remember. And I'm not, I don't know if the commissioner, if it's more you're supposed to be responsible for everybody or if the commissioner's part of that. I would imagine for Hunter, he would continue with, and this is just a guess, would be that he would be continuing with whatever league it was that he was monitoring.
Keep in mind, they're down one person already because.
But they've added the Utah ID.
But they were down two, and now they're only down one.
Okay.
So when, I guess what I'm trying to say is when Mac Rhodes, they were already down one going into yesterday. Mac Rhodes steps off, so now they're down two
people.
Why were
they down one going into yesterday?
Somebody dropped off right before the season began.
Oh, okay.
And they never filled that
spot. I forgot about
that. So they're already, like they're operating, or they have been operating this year, mm-hmm. already down one mm-hmm. committee member.
Right. So basically what the commissioner needs to do is, or the commissioner.
The chairman.
The chairman needs to be aware enough of all of the teams and everything that's gone on to be able to lead the discussion. They, in theory, should be doing a little bit more research, should be more prepared to kind of lead, to steer the conversation. They also are going to be making sure that all the kind of protocols are being followed in terms of, because there are protocols for the way in which they discuss things, you know, mm-hmm. how they frame, you know, are they discussing or do they veer too much into discussing future possible outcomes versus talking about what's already happened? You know, steering that kind of discussion, making sure that they are aligned in what they are looking at. And then the TV thing is a large responsibility because it's not just like, all right, let me plop. It's not the, you know, plop down in the chair and do the thing. They spend quite a while preparing for some of the questions that they might be asked and how they're going to answer them. Because one thing I think people don't think about that often that I always thought was interesting was you do not know how the chairman voted. You do not know what the chairman's poll was. We don't get to see anybody's individual ballots. So they might have to get up there, especially when there's like a controversial choice. They might have chosen differently, but they have to get up there and they have to present a united front and explain why the committee chose to do what they did, even if it was something that in their personal sort of ballot they did not vote for. So the prep for the TV thing does take a little time, and it is a little bit more of a time commitment too, because the committee members are going down there on Monday, Tuesday. Mm-hmm. It's typically, that's when they have to be there. But most of the committee members are leaving Tuesday afternoon, but the chairman has to stay until Tuesday night and can maybe get that last flight out if they're lucky, but might end up, you know, staying till Wednesday morning.
I don't think he's flying commercial right now.
Yeah, I don't think he is. But a lot of times they are.
I think he can probably find some transportation out of town.
Typically, they're a lot of them are doing commercial, and it's not uncommon for them to do that.
And maybe he's not coming right back to Fayetteville.
He has flown commercial to committee meetings. I know that. Not that that matters that much, but it's a little bit more of a time commitment. And they do have to, you were asking me this yesterday on the phone, do they have to do the TV thing in Grapevine, or can they do it, like, could he in theory do it from Fayetteville? Mm-hmm. And they do have to do it. I guess they could maybe try to make an exception if it was really, really needed. But there's no precedent for it, but they have, the setup that they have is set up specifically there for that.
Wouldn't it be something if he was flying commercial? And somebody's just sitting in like the B terminal at DFW. It's like, hey, Hunter Yurachek is getting ready to get on a flight to Roanoke. You know, what does this mean?
Yeah.
Take flight tracking to a whole new level.
It'd be kind of funny if he did that like just for fun. Like just like picked somewhere kind of random and was like,
there are people who believe that they take the Razorback Foundation jet and fly it thousands of miles away just to throw people off the scent.
I wouldn't be that surprised.
I don't think that happens.
I mean, especially, well, right in this era when, Lord forbid, we spend money on anything, probably not. Yeah. I don't think
Have you seen the cost of jet fuel lately?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think we're wasting the money on that one. But so, yeah, they are typically there Monday, Tuesday. Selection week, conference championship weekend and selection weekend, they're there from Friday all the way through Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But if the timeline we think that's happening is happening, then that wouldn't really matter at that point.
Nobody really knows who Hunter is surrounding himself with in this search. I'm pretty confident there is a member of the Board of Trustees who's part of this. I would not be surprised just based on how he has done some of his past searches.
I was going to say, that's not that uncommon.
No, yeah. No. I mean, like when they hired John Calipari, Ted Dickey mm-hmm. was part of that. When they hired Sam Pittman, Steve Cox was part of it. There may have been a trustee involved in other parts of it. You look at the athletics committee on the board of trustees. You've got Kevin Crass. You've got Ted Dickey. And you've got Ed Fryer. Maybe one of those three are involved. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't surprise me. And then, you know, I mean, also John Fagg, when he was here as an mm-hmm. assistant AD or associate AD, whatever they called him. He's now the AD at UT Arlington. But he went with him on a number of these to go hire coaches. I believe Matt Trantham was with him on the search that resulted in John Calipari. So if you just kind of look at past coaching searches, I'm going to guess there's probably a couple of people that are really tight. Mm-hmm. Nobody's saying anything, obviously. They've said they're going to use a search firm. I can't figure out who the search firm is. Trust me, I have tried. I'm getting no answers there. I think there's been some talk about, is there like maybe a committee of former past players who are having some input on this? I don't know.
That would surprise me a little bit, but that's just a gut feel. I mean, that's not based on any information. That would kind of surprise me.
The point being, he being Juracek, keeps everything close to the vest. Where I was going with this, though, you look at the CFP committee, a lot of ADs, you know, some former players in here, some former head coaches like Mark D'Antonio, Mike Riley's on this committee. I just wonder, like, do you think like, when they're down in Dallas and they're sitting around and, you know, they're at the cookie bar at the Gaylord, you think maybe they're just talking about, hey, what are your thoughts about this?
I'm sure, yeah. That's half of these events.
And I wonder, is there some value in him being part of the committee while he's on the coaching search? Because you and I were talking about this yesterday. Has there ever been an AD who's been on the playoff committee simultaneous to trying to find a head coach? I don't think there has been.
Not a football coach, obviously. I went back and looked. I thought it was going to take a lot longer, but then I remembered the committee hasn't actually been around all that long.
Yeah, it's only 12 years old.
And the chairman, I don't know why I keep wanting to call him a commissioner. The chairman tends to serve 2 years.
Maybe you're foreshadowing something.
Yeah. Oh.
Commissioner Juracek. Are you there?
They typically serve for 2 years, and so mm-hmm. there's not been all that many chairmen. So it's pretty easy to tell. Do a quick Google about when, you know, who their coach mm-hmm. was at that time and did it change. And so, yeah, I don't think that there has been a chairman that had to hire a football coach during this same time.
All right. God forbid we talk about the game tomorrow. Arkansas is playing LSU. The Razorbacks are a 5.5-point underdog in this game down at Tiger Stadium. We talked to Ron Higgins earlier in the week. What a hoot that guy is. Columnist at the Shreveport-Bossier Journal. And I asked him, you know, do LSU fans, do they love night games or do they hate day games more? And he said he thinks they hate day games more. He said because it throws off their entire drinking schedule. I was listening to Matt Moscona this morning on an interview with Bo. And he said that, you know, he thinks that there might only be like 60,000 people in the stadium on Saturday. And so it's not going to be Death Valley like we know Death Valley to be, like what it can be. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people down there. They've checked out on this team, and I think it's kind of – can LSU, can't they clinch a bowl game with a win tomorrow?
I think they can. Yeah, they're at 5 wins.
Which just kind of goes to show you what people think about the bowl system now.
Yeah.
That you might be playing this game in a 60% full stadium yep. when you've got a chance to clinch a bowl game.
Yeah.
People don't care about the bowls, and the sooner that college football's leadership gets a grasp of that, I think the better off everybody's going to be – because you can expand the playoff, you can make the whole postseason just a lot different, and you can make it reflective of what people's views are. That's a total different aside. Maybe we can have that discussion more in December. This is a weird game to try to figure out, though. I mean, what kind of Arkansas team are you going to get? I think you're going to get a competitive effort from them. I mean, they have... Say what you want to about what's happened since Petrino's taken over as the interim head coach. They have been competitive. They have given good effort. The effort question that was there after they played Notre Dame, that hadn't been there the last 4 weeks. And so that part has improved. I think the defense has improved. It had a long way to go, but I think it's improved a little bit. It helps that they're playing teams that aren't as good offensively. Got another one of those in LSU tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Who's LSU play at quarterback? That's a big deal here. LSU, they've struggled with mobile quarterbacks, the RPO-type quarterbacks. You know, a lot of times Arkansas's played LSU after this Alabama game, the so-called Alabama effect, which I think is as much mental as it is physical, because you put so much effort and focus into that Alabama game. LSU always has a bye week going into that game, and then you come out and you lose. What's your reaction like the next week? Arkansas's caught him sleeping a couple of times. So these are all things that I'm thinking about going into this game. I certainly think Arkansas's got a chance to upset LSU tomorrow. And I don't even know that it would be that big of an upset if Arkansas wins. If you look at the talent on the two teams, yeah, I'd say it's an upset. But if you just look at, you know, what we kind of think about these two teams going into the week, I don't know that it'd be that big of an upset. That said, I don't know that I trust Arkansas, because as much as the effort has improved and the defense has improved, the result under Petrino has still been a team that gets close and cannot find a way to win at the end of the game. And that makes me trust this team very, very little.
Yeah, I said that a few weeks ago when we were picking. I think it was, it might have been the Mississippi State game. And I was saying, what evidence do I have that this is going to be the time that they pull it out? And that's kind of how I feel about this LSU game too, where I do think LSU is a little bit better, I guess, than some of the opponents they've played in the last few weeks. But what, you know, I think they could do it, but what evidence do I have to say, yes, I think that they, this is going to be the time that they get this one done, because they haven't been able to close it out, like you said. And so I do think there's some favorable parts of this matchup. I think, you know, LSU doesn't run the ball all that well. Garrett Nussmeier is maybe hurt. They changed his status to probable after, I guess, he had, what was it, an oblique or some kind of an injury.
I'm not sure. I think he's been dealing with multiple.
Yeah,
things.
They said he had a setback, I think was the word, in practice, and so now he is probable for the game. But either way, they said they want to play both quarterbacks with him and Michael Van Buren. Van Buren, who had a good game against Arkansas while he was at Mississippi State last year, in a game where, you know, Arkansas blew him out just because Mississippi State's defense was so bad. But I think... So I think there's some favorable things at work here for Arkansas, but I don't have enough evidence to confidently say, yeah, I think Arkansas is going to win. I think they have a chance. I don't think they get blown out, because I do think you're right about the Alabama effect and just the fact that it is a lost season for LSU. They have the challenge that every, you know, mid-season firing team has, where what are we, you know, what is it all for now? I think that that's just a really hard thing for a team to kind of keep together with that, especially with LSU, with how much just drama has ensued there and how, you know, does it all feel a little bit futile for them at this point? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe their staff will be really good about being able to keep them motivated the way that somehow Arkansas staff has been able to do for the most part with Arkansas. So I think LSU is going to win. But like I said, I think it could be close. I think it will probably be kind of ugly, just because I don't think LSU is great at offense, and their defense is pretty good, and I think Arkansas might have some trouble with it. But like you said, the RPO quarterback thing has been dubious, so Taylen Green could have a chance to shine here. So I don't know. I mean, I think it might not be the most attractive football game you've ever seen in your life, but what Arkansas game this year really has been?
One of the key players to watch in this game is Quincy Rhodes.
Yeah.
Number one, you've got to be able to keep the LSU quarterback in the pocket. But if you can keep them in the pocket, those tackles haven't been real good against, you know, good defensive ends. And he's proven himself, I think, to be a pretty good rush defensive end this year. I think I saw something this morning that he has more tackles for loss for Arkansas, or the most tackles for loss since Trey Flowers 11
really?
Years ago. I think
that's really
something
surprising.
I read. Maybe it was the most by a defensive lineman.
Maybe.
But, I mean, like, that's some elite company that you're being mentioned there with, Trey Flowers. And so how effective can he be getting to LSU's quarterback and being disruptive? Because all you got to do, a lot of times, you're disruptive one time, and that kills a drive. Like, the numbers suggest that if you have one negative yardage play, the amount, and I'm not saying against Arkansas, I'm just talking about teams in general, the amount of times, basically, the amount of touchdown drives where you don't have negative yardage plays are so much higher than the amount of touchdown drives where you have that one negative yardage play, because it's a big difference when you're facing third and seven and you're facing third and 12, 13.
Yeah. Yeah. He's at 14 tackles for loss. Quincy Rhodes is. I just went and checked because I didn't know the number off the top of my head. Second most in the SEC. I mean, it's been really impressive.
It's been very quiet, I feel like.
I know.
Like,
well,
him.
Because, and I was saying this, I think, on the radio the other day or telling somebody, it's been unfortunate that a guy like him, a guy like Rohan Jones, you know, guys that are having really good seasons just don't kind of get the appreciation or the level of notice because of just the way this season's gone and the way that everybody is more interested in the future, which is not a bad thing. If you're not that interested, if you're kind of checked out on this season, and you're mostly worried about the coaching search. That's not a bad thing. You're not wrong for that. But it's unfortunate, I think, that some of these guys on an individual level are having good seasons, but it hasn't been able to translate into team wins.
Trey Flowers had 15.5
okay.
tackles for loss in 2015. This is the most for an Arkansas defensive player, not just a lineman, but any defensive player since that year. To that point, it feels like these two fan bases – like, you're going to kind of be watching this game. You know, a lot of people say, well, I'm not going to watch this. You're going to be watching.
Yeah.
You watch the games. You
can't
only got 12 times to watch this a year. People are going to be watching this, but it is weird where you watch this and it feels like this is just kind of a pastime to get you to what you really want to talk about, which is more on the coaching search coming up Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and on down the line.
For sure. It's been tough the last couple of weeks. I guess not last week, but having to come up with questions for coaches and players going into each week and trying to find interesting angles and things like that might entice people. But it's been kind of tough.
All right, when we come back, we're going to look around the SEC this week. We'll give you our weekend predictions. First, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. And come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. I feel like my voice is almost gone today. I was out at the cross country meet this morning. I've still got the credential on here to prove it. I wasn't screaming or anything, although there were many people around who were. A lot of people out there. I was surprised by how many people were out there. But I think the weather's getting to me. It's weird, this weather that we've got. I mean, you're at a cross-country meet, like an NCAA cross-country meet. Usually people are like, I shouldn't say usually, a lot of times, like hypothermia becomes a real deal at these meets.
Yeah.
And this morning they had to move it to earlier in the day because it was going to be too hot for them to be running in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
And well, not too hot, but like they didn't want them running in that heat and then having to turn around and run 8 days later in Missouri. By the way, Arkansas's men finished second at the cross country meet. They're going to move on to the NCAA championship meet at Missouri next week. The women finished fourth. They're not going to get to the NCAA meet for the first time in about 15 years, but they did have Sydney Vaught, she finished second, and so she will get to run at the NCAA meet next week as an individual. It is a big weekend here in town just in terms of things going on. Had the cross-country meet this morning. There's a basketball game tonight at Bud Walton Arena. Razorbacks take on Samford at 7 o'clock. Christina is going to be there for that
one. I'm making a
rare
basketball media appearance. I go to the games usually with my fiancé and just sit in his seats, but I haven't been on the press row at Bud Walton since, I guess, right after I got hired, before we hired Anthony, probably January of whatever that year that was.
Piece of advice, take noise-canceling earphones. They turn up the music in that. I'm going to sound like the old man. I get it. I don't care.
Maybe I'm kind of sensitive to that,
too, I'm getting
there.
I'm getting there. The other day against UCA, I sat there for most of the game with my noise-canceling earphones in because it was so
loud.
There was a point early in the game where John Williams is down on the floor, and he's having to like scream into the microphone and do some sort of reader because the band is playing over the top of him. And that was just kind of a microcosm of the noise that was going on in that place the other day.
Yeah.
And God knows it wasn't from the fans. I mean, like it was like
It's even worse because there's no, I don't know.
It was like sitting in Mullins Library for a lot of that game. Like if it hadn't have been for the DJ, you know, piping in the music every time there was a break in the action, that would have been a very, very quiet crowd on Tuesday night. But boy, do they pump the music into that place.
So loud. Yeah.
The NBAification. Is that a word? The NBAification.
Yeah.
We're going to make it a word if it's not. a Bud Walton Arena is very real.
I used to think it was like a must thing because I, you know, he was into kind of trying to make a spectacle, you know, the marketing kind of thing. That was kind of his deal. And so I used to think it was kind of a must directive, but it has stayed.
Maybe it's a Calipari directive too.
Yeah.
Maybe they're trying to recruit a type of player who says, hey, you know, we want it to feel like a Lakers game. Yeah. I don't know. But boy, it was loud. Yes, get off my lawn. That's our soccer is tonight at Razorback Field. This is going to be the first round of the NCAA tournament. Anthony Christensen is going to be there for us. Arkansas playing Dartmouth. That game is going to be starting at 6 o'clock, and it's going to be on ESPN Plus tonight. Razorback's trying to move on to the second round of the NCAA soccer tournament. Of course, we mentioned football tomorrow. Women's basketball, kind of an ugly win last night, like really actually a really ugly win last night over Southeastern Louisiana. This is a team that lost to LSU last week by 89. They were losing 61-6 at halftime. Now, I get that LSU is like a cut above most women's basketball teams, but to go from losing by 89 on one SEC floor to losing by 8 at Arkansas, that is striking.
Yeah.
That is very striking. And we'll just leave that there. The women are going to play Texas Tech on Sunday down in Lubbock. All right, moving on now. SEC games this week. I got to pull this up. Usually I'm more prepared than this. But there are, you know, it's a decent slate of games this week. There's a couple of big games. I know that you've got Texas at Georgia. You got Alabama hosting Oklahoma. And we'll get to those games. But we'll talk about the, what would you call this, the undercard? Isn't that right? Like, is that what you call the, like the start of the boxing matches?
Having never watched boxing live in my whole life, I have no idea.
I think they call it the undercard, don't they?
It's something card.
I'm gonna have to look this
There's
up here in a second.
Always a card.
Yeah, I'm not much of a boxing guy. I rented one boxing match. This is like right when Jermaine Taylor was becoming a big deal, and because he was from Little Rock.
I don't even know who that is.
And well, he's from Little Rock, and I don't know if it was the heavyweight championship. And again, not a boxing guy, but he was fighting for a championship. This has been, I don't know, 20 plus years ago. Not a little bit of money, and it's like he's from Arkansas, and it's like, hey, I'm gonna spend $50, and me and my buddies are gonna watch this fight. And then nobody ever gets knocked out. It always has to go to the scoring.
I don't even know that.
All right,
you said you know, and I'm like,
we'll be back Monday after this great boxing discussion that we've had here. We start with 11 o'clock on ESPN. South Carolina goes to A&M. A&M 9-0. Trying to get to 10-0. The thought is they're probably going to do this pretty easily. South Carolina, a win away from being knocked out of bowl contention this year. Aggies are a 17.5-point favorite in this game, Christina, and our ratings prediction likes Texas A&M by 10.
Yeah, I do too, actually. You know, this has been, what an odd season for South Carolina. You know, they came in with not crazy high expectations, but there was a lot of Lenora Sellers hype. I think there was a little bit of, you know, could they do enough to kind of be a fringe, maybe playoff, you know, kind of sneak into the playoff, depending on how the season goes. And it has just not turned out at all. They're sitting at 3-6. They've won one SEC game. I don't think there's any reason why Texas A&M should be all that concerned here.
South Carolina made the wrong choice at offensive coordinator. That's the biggest thing for them, I think, this year. You know, they had Dow Loggins last year. Mm-hmm. He leaves there and he goes to Appalachian State. And I thought it was so peculiar that they went and hired Mike Shula, who had not been a head coach, or he, not even a head coach. He had not been an assistant coach in college football since he got fired as Alabama's head coach in 2006. Just think about that for a minute. And so, you know, it didn't make sense then.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, it really hasn't made sense. Yeah, I think Texas A&M wins this game really big, really big. And they're just kind of, you know, they're just kind of doing their thing. Seems like for a third-ranked team, people aren't talking about a whole lot. People are more interested in, hey, look at what Alabama's doing. Hey, Ohio State. Indiana had that great win last week over Penn State. A&M's just kind of, they're just right there. You know, the next, like just kind of hiding in the grass. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're a couple of wins now away from playing, or three wins really, from playing for a national championship or playing in the playoff as an undefeated team. I think they're in the playoff probably, I wouldn't say regardless of what happens, but as long as they don't slip up before Texas, it's very hard to imagine that they're not going to make the playoffs.
Who do
this
they
year.
Play in between? Do you know off the top of your head? I don't remember.
Why'd you ask me this?
because I don't feel like Googling it.
I want to say
right
it's
now.
A non-conference game.
Oh, is it like
that
a...
they've got?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
you know, a lot of teams, they like to
those
do that.
They used to call SoCon Saturday.
Yeah.
They play.
It's the pre-Thanksgiving.
Samford.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a feeling...
The football team, not the basketball team, because it's the Bud Walton tonight.
I have a feeling Texas A&M is going to be just fine.
I think they're going to be too. They're a good team. And I think that they kind of... It looks like they're getting better as the season goes on, which is kind of scary, I would think, if you're one of their opponents. So I think A&M wins that game. Moving on, 6 o'clock on ESPN. Florida goes to Ole Miss. Ole Miss 9-1. The Rebels are an 11.5-point favorite. Our ratings like Ole Miss by 8. You know the Florida fans are going to be watching this like, Lane, let's evaluate our next head coach here. I'm a bit surprised if Lane Kiffin leaves Ole Miss. Looks like he's got him in a pretty good spot to go to the playoff. And the timing of the playoff makes you wonder, is anybody going to wait around and see if he'll maybe say yes to him in late December?
Yeah, that sets you up. That's a big problem, I think, for some of these programs kind of at the top and programs that are wanting to poach a coach who might be playing in the playoff is
poach
you gotta
coach.
Wait. Poach a coach.
That could be like the next football scoop. Poach a coach.
Perfect. We'll launch that ourselves. It's just you have to wait a really long time. It's a problem. And, I talk a lot about things I hear on Split Zone Duo just because I really like the work that they do. And I know we have some people on our message board, at least, that are also into that show. But they were talking the other day about how eventually, and they weren't necessarily saying that they think Lane's going to do it here, but they were talking about it in that context. Eventually, there's going to be a coach that leaves a playoff run for some big job, for some amount of money, for something.
Like a Golish?
Yeah, potentially.
Would Golish do it?
I don't know. I mean, depends. There's a lot of circumstances on that. But, eventually somebody's going to do it. And like, it'll set a trend. And it'll set a precedent.
I feel like if somebody was going to do it, it would be that group of five, group of six
so
coach. Because they've just got a much better opportunity somewhere. And maybe they get to keep coaching their team.
Yeah.
But maybe,
I see this happen a lot of times
with coordinators. Lane Kiffin was this way. Well, he wasn't this way. Mm-hmm. Was he this way? Yeah, he was at Alabama. Mm-hmm. He had taken the FAU job, and he coached him in one playoff game, and then he didn't get to coach him the next game. Mm-hmm. So you do see that with coordinators from time to time, where they are doing all this work during the week, and then they're also kind of helping out with game, and it's a weird kind of balancing act that they've got. I think Ole Miss wins this big.
Yeah,
Florida,
no, I do too.
Efficiency ratings say that Florida's game against Kentucky last week was the worst SEC game this year by one team.
Wow.
I mean, they were horrible. Horrible.
Yeah.
38-7. Offense was a mess. Defense was a mess. Against a Kentucky team whose offense is not very good. Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. Did I say horrible?
I think so.
Horrible outing by Florida last week. Mississippi State goes to Missouri. Bulldogs are 5-5. Mizzou is 6-3. Eli Drinkwitz was out there this week saying that you can't focus just on the playoffs. He said, I think you got to get past the point where only the 12 teams that get to the playoffs have a good season. They're out of the playoff discussion now at Missouri. They got some problems with their third-string quarterback. They're a favorite in this game by 6.5 points, and the ratings like them by 2. But this third-string quarterback that they got, I mean, they got some real offensive issues. Early in the year, Missouri could run the ball. The running game isn't quite what it was the first 4 or 5 weeks, and now you got a quarterback who's not getting you anything through the air either.
Yeah, I've picked Mississippi State here, even though I know they're an underdog. But I don't see how Missouri can do it with their third-string quarterback. There's nothing that he's showed me that makes me think, there's nothing that I know of him or expect from that offense, even around him, that I would think, would give them all that much in this spot. And Mississippi State, doesn't have a great defense. Mississippi State's not a great team, but I don't think at this point Missouri really is either. So, again, I know it would be an upset, but it wouldn't surprise me that much to see it.
Dad Eli Drinkwitz at your own peril.
Yeah, I've done it before.
I'm going Missouri. They're at home. I think they win this game. A couple games we won't pick. A couple of cupcakes in the SEC this week. Tennessee hosts New Mexico State. New Mexico State is 3-6. Really interesting game in Lexington. Kentucky is 4-5. They're hosting one of the best teams in the FCS. Tennessee Tech comes in there this week. They're 10-0. Kentucky just beat Florida.
Watch this space.
It could be a weird game where it's like, okay, now has Mark Stoops done enough to keep his job? And now all of a sudden, maybe you're playing a one-possession game against an FCS team on your home field, and people are – is basketball? Yeah, basketball's here again.
Yeah.
You just lost to Louisville, right? let's hear the big SEC games this week. Texas, number 10, going to Georgia, number 5. This is going to be 6:30 on ABC Saturday night. Texas still right there, trying to knock on the door of the SEC championship game. This is Georgia's last conference game. They've got to play Georgia Tech, and they've got a cupcake, too, still left. So this is kind of like their last data point, so to speak, in terms of trying to get into the conference championship game. They get to play their last conference game this week and then just see if, you know, things kind of break weird in these rivalry games in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I've picked Georgia here. I actually think, at least in our newspaper picks that we do earlier in the week, we actually had consensus across our whole staff about Georgia, which surprised me a little bit just because I think, you know, this is a game that everybody's kind of looking at. I know Georgia's favored, but I think there are some people that think Texas could make some noise here. But I do think I've gone with Georgia here just because I think they're more complete. I think they've been a little bit more reliable. I think Texas, you know, I try not to get too bogged down into like the early season Arch Manning conversation because of the strides that he's made. But, you know, this would be such a big spot for him if he could perform in this game. I think it would finally kind of shake off that early start that he had. But I just don't see it. I just think that Georgia will be able to get this one done. I know that there's been some talk about, you know, how limiting is Gunnar Stockton to you? Not that he's bad, but that he's just not a great quarterback. But Georgia's won without great quarterbacks before many, many times. And so I just kind of continue to think that Georgia is one of the top teams here.
Georgia's a 6.5-point favorite. Our efficiency ratings like Georgia by 5. Texas is number 8 in the SEC in my team efficiency ratings. 8. That doesn't really scream SEC.
And Georgia's 2. So that's Georgia's what I say too. When I mean they're a little bit, they're more complete. They're a pretty complete
Texas
team.
Just ahead of Missouri. Mm. Like, think about if Missouri was playing Georgia. What do you think would happen?
Not great.
I mean, that's
doubt kinda, Eli Drinkwitz at your own peril.
Well, in Athens, it's a different story. Yeah. And that's the other thing. It's in Athens where they hardly ever lose. I know they lost to Alabama this year. That's the only time they've lost in Athens since Sam Pittman was coaching there. Think about that for a minute. I think Georgia wins this game. Another big game in the SEC this week. OU number 11 going to Alabama number 4. If you're OU, you got to win this game. I think to stay in playoff consideration, maybe you lose close and maybe there's some other things that happen and you get in as a 3-loss team, but that seems unlikely. Alabama's a 5.5-point favorite and our efficiency ratings like Alabama by 3.
I went alone here in our, at least among our staff.
Did you go with OU?
I did.
Ooh.
I went alone here. I am a believer in the Oklahoma defense. I have concerns about Alabama's inability to run the ball and stop the run. Relative inability, I should say. I just think this is a big spot for them. I think this is a spot that they could make a statement. I don't think that Alabama is a sure thing, and I don't think Alabama is a sure thing in this game.
I feel like the key in this game is the pass rush for OU, because everybody talks about OU's, you get the best rush defense in the country or one of the best, and Alabama can't run the ball. Okay, well, I mean, Alabama hadn't run the ball in any of their games this year.
Yeah.
They're a team that, you know, I mean, they have figured out that their identity and their success is just going to be, you know, chucking the ball all over the field.
But I think Oklahoma will be able to do something about that.
Can they get pressure on Simpson? I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I think Alabama's defense is getting a lot better. And you talk about Arkansas coaching candidates. I don't know if he's going to get a look here. Kane Womack is the Alabama defensive coordinator, played at Fayetteville High, played fullback for the Razorbacks. Now he's a defensive coordinator. Similar track record, I might add, of Clark Lee at Vanderbilt, fullback to defensive coordinator. He's got some head coaching experience. I don't think he's – like, I would be kind of surprised if he gets a shot with Arkansas.
I think it's a little early on him yet.
But I think he's 38. He's been a head coach before, one at South Alabama, where it's really hard to win. I think somebody's going to give him a chance this year. I think he's going to have a really good chance.
You think this year he'll get a
chance? I think he'll get a chance somewhere. I think he's got a good chance to be a Broyles Award finalist again. I say again because he was at Indiana 5 years ago as their DC. I like Alabama's defense, and I think that's the key in this game. OU, Mateer hasn't looked the same since he came back from the injury, and Alabama's playing at home. And whether revenge is a factor or not, Alabama went there last year, and OU killed Alabama's playoff chances.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Here's the chance to pay back Oklahoma. I think Alabama wins this game big.
Okay.
I think they beat OU big.
Interesting.
On Saturday. All right. Razorbacks. Hey, there is a Razorback game this week. Much as some people might like you to forget. Arkansas 2-7, LSU 5-4. They're both on long losing streaks. And the thing that's interesting to me, Christina, this is 3 straight games now where Arkansas's played a game against an opponent that's on a long losing streak.
Yep.
Like the winner of this game is going to come out of the game feeling better about themselves than they did going into the game. Probably. Arkansas's lost 7 in a row. LSU's lost 3 in a row. The Tigers are a 4.5-point favorite to win this game, and I think that's down a point from maybe earlier in the week. Our ratings prediction likes LSU by 3. What do you like?
I went with LSU. It's funny. Ethan went alone here and went with Arkansas. We need to call him and ask him why he would do such a thing.
He's on an airplane to Baton Rouge right now.
Yes, yes. So I went with LSU just because of what I was saying before about how I do think that there's some favorable matchup things here, but I just don't have any evidence to say this is the spot that they're finally going to break through and get it done. This is the third game in a row now, right, that they've had, you know, it's been one of those games where you're going, well, somebody's got to win. And Arkansas still hasn't. And what evidence do I have that now they're going to do it? Because they've done it in games that it looked like they could or should win, mm-hmm. that I think looked a little bit more winnable even than this one, and they still haven't done it. So I don't have anything pointing me toward, yes, this is the spot. I think it might look good. You know, there might be some things where they look good. Like I said, I think Talen Green could have a real chance to shine here, but he's shown in some other games and it hasn't mattered. So I think I just don't have a ton of faith that they can get it done, and maybe that's too negative of me.
It reminds me of the Auburn game. Auburn, mm-hmm. no offense, pretty good defense, or at least, you know, a good enough defense. And then Arkansas is who, you know, I mean, they're who they've been all season long. I'll tell you the game that actually made me end up picking LSU, weird as this is, Penn State, Indiana. Penn State, think about this, hold on. I'm going to get there. You're looking at me weird. Penn State, they got NFL guys all over that football field, right? And everybody's saying, oh, you know, Penn State, they've lost 5 in a row. They're not any good. They're still the same team that you thought they were in the preseason, like ranked number 2, number 3 in the preseason. LSU ranked number 8 in the preseason or whatever they were for a reason, because of the talent they have on that team. If they play to the level of their capability, all these NFL guys on LSU against an Arkansas roster that doesn't have a whole lot of LSU guys, LSU wins this game every time. And they're at home. And so I think that they have got there is a greater chance that LSU plays up to its potential in this game, especially being at home, than there is that Arkansas plays up to its potential in this game.
And
so
even if they both did, I think LSU would win.
Yeah, because I think LSU's got a higher ceiling than Arkansas does. Yeah. And so I think LSU wins this game. And if you want icing on the cake, Arkansas is wearing its white helmets this weekend. Arkansas never wins in its white helmets. But I put in my prediction before I found out about the white helmets. It just said, okay, I feel better about this prediction.
People get fired up over the helmets.
They never win in the. I don't understand why they keep wearing the white helmets. They never win in them. And people say, well, they never win the red helmets either. And there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
But they never win in the white helmets. Like,
when did they bring those in?
2012.
Really? It's been that long?
Yeah. So they're wearing white helmets. I don't know if they're wearing. LSU always wears white jerseys at home, so maybe Arkansas is wearing like the red jerseys
maybe.
With the white helmets.
Yeah.
We just know they're wearing white helmets this weekend, and they never win in the white helmets.
Does LSU? I think no, they won, wear the yellow helmets.
I want to say they've won 2, maybe 3 times in the white helmets in like 20-something games. It's an insane stat.
That's insane.
So that's your stat of the day is that Arkansas is wearing the white helmets.
How much
never win.
Do you like adjust the line on any game in which Arkansas is wearing the white helmets?
Oh, I'd say by at least 7 points. I don't know. I don't know how you qualify that. But maybe Vegas does have something about that. All right, Arkansas LSU 11:45. I hope Arkansas wins. I really want to come in here and talk about an Arkansas football victory this season
it's
ends.
It's way more fun.
Like, and I've had several times here. I thought they were going to beat Auburn. I thought they were going to beat Mississippi State. Maybe I'm going for like a reverse jinx type thing here. I'm going to say they're losing in hopes that we can come on here Monday and talk about them winning. 11:45 tomorrow on the SEC Network. You can read all of our coverage from that game and all of the games this weekend. There's a ton of going on here in town and elsewhere at our website, wholehogsports.com. Hope to see you on our podcast Monday. Have a great day, great weekend, everybody.